Chapter 49. Dark clouds threatened, but no rain fell as Pitt and Julia turned off Highway 43 and took a well-graded dirt road through fruit orchards common to the shore of Lake Michigan before entering a forest of pine and birch trees. Keeping one eye on the mailboxes perched beside the road, Pitt finally spotted the one he was looking for, a box built in the shape of an old steamship and elevated by welded anchor chain. The name Gallagher was lettered on the hull. "This must be the place," said Pitt, as he turned into the little grassy lane leading to a picturesque two-story log house. He and Julia had flown into Green Bay, Wisconsin, where they rented a car for the 30-mile drive south to Manitowoc, a port for the big ships sailing the lakes. The Gallagher residence sat on the lakefront, 10 miles below the port. Perlmutter had offered to call ahead and alert the Gallaghers to their coming, but Sandecker thought it best to arrive unexpected in case the Princess Doan was not a subject the old ship's engineer wished to discuss, and conveniently found a reason not to be at home. The front of the Gallagher house faced the trees, while the rear opened onto Lake Michigan. The logs had been rough-hewn into squared beams before they were fitted together and chinked. The entire lower third of the house was mortared river rock that gave it a rustic look. The peaked roof was sheathed in copper that had patinated to a dark turquoise green. The windows were high and trimmed with vertical shutters. The exterior wood was stained a partridge brown with a tint of gray to make it blend perfectly with the surrounding forest. Pitt stopped the car on a lawn that ran around the house and parked next to a roofed-over carport that housed a Jeep Grand Cherokee and a small 18-foot cabin cruiser with a big outboard motor on the transom. He and Julia walked up the steps to a narrow front porch where Pitt raised a door knocker and rapped three times. Suddenly, they could hear the yapping of small dogs inside. After a few moments, the door was opened by a tall, older woman with long gray hair tied in a bow. Her eyes were startlingly blue, and her face untouched by the advance of wrinkles. Her body had rounded during the years, but she still carried herself like a woman 40 years younger. It was obvious to Julia that she had once been very beautiful. She paused to shoo a pair of short-haired dachshunds into silence.
"Hello," she said sweetly. "The skies look like they might send us some rain."
"Perhaps not," replied Pitt. "The clouds appear to be passing to the west."
"Can I help you with anything?"
"My name is Dirk Pitt, and this is Julia Lee. We're looking for Mr. Ian Gallagher."
"You found him," the lady said, smiling. "I'm Mrs. Gallagher. Won't you come in?"
"Yes, thank you," said Julia, passing through the doorway as Pitt stood aside. The dachshunds ran and sat obediently on the stairway leading up to the second floor of the house. Julia stopped and gazed in mild surprise through the entryway into the rooms beyond. She had expected to see the interior of the house decorated in early American with a sprinkling of antiques. But this house was filled with exquisitely carved Chinese furniture and art objects. The wall hangings were embroidered with silk designs. Beautifully glazed vases stood in corners with dried floral arrangements rising from them. Delicate porcelain figurines perched on high shelves. One glass-enclosed cabinet held nearly 30 jade sculptures. The carpets, lying on the wooden floors, were all woven with Chinese designs.
"Oh, my," Julia gasped. "I feel like I've just walked into my mother and father's house in San Francisco."
Mrs. Gallagher suddenly began speaking to Julia in Mandarin Chinese.
"I thought you might appreciate things from the Orient." "May I ask if your things are very old, Mrs. Gallagher?" inquired Julia, replying in Mandarin. "Please call me Katie. Everyone else does. It's short for Katrina."
She made a hand gesture around the house.
"None go back more than 50 years. My husband and I accumulated what you see since we were married. I was born and raised in China, and we met there. we still have a great affection for its culture." She invited them into the living room and then returned to speaking English for Pitt's benefit. "Please make yourself comfortable. May I get you some tea?" "Yes, thank you," said Julia. Pitt walked over to a rock fireplace and stared up at a painting of a ship that hung over the mantel. Without turning, he said, "The Princess Doan." Mrs. Gallagher pressed both hands to her breast and let out a deep sigh. "Ian always said someone would come someday."
"Who did you think would come?"
"Someone from the government."
Pitt gave her a warm smile.
"Your husband is very perceptive. I'm from the National Underwater and Marine Agency, and Julia is an agent with the Immigration and Naturalization Service."
She looked at Julia sadly.
"I suppose you'll be wanting to deport us because we came into the country illegally."
Pitt and Julia exchanged puzzled glances.
"Why, no," he said. "We're here on a completely different matter."
Julia walked over and put her arm around the taller woman.
"You do not have to worry about the past," she said softly. "That was a long time ago. And according to the records, both you and your husband are solid tax-paying citizens. But we did some shenanigans with the paperwork."
"The less said, the better," Julia laughed.
"If you won't tell, neither will I."
Pitt looked at Katie Gallagher curiously. "You talk as if you both entered the United States at the same time."
"We did," she said,
nodding at the painting.
"On the Princess Doan."
"You were on the ship when she sank?" asked Pitt incredulously.
"It's a strange story."
"We'd love to hear it."
"Please sit down and I'll bring the tea."
She smiled at Julia.
"I think you'll enjoy the taste. I order it from Shanghai from the same store I used to buy it at 60 years ago.
A few minutes later, as she poured a dark green tea, Katie told the story about how she met Ian Hong Kong Gallagher when they both worked for the Canton Line Shipping Company. She told of visiting her future husband on board the Princess while the ship was being stripped for the voyage to the scrappers, and how hundreds of crates were delivered to the dock and loaded aboard in the dead of night.
"One of Chiang Kai-shek's generals, a man by the name of Kung Hui."
"We're familiar with the name," Pitt interrupted her. "It was he who seized the ship and loaded it with a stolen cargo."
"All done in great secrecy," Katie agreed. "After General Hui commandeered the Princess, he refused to allow me and my little dog Fritz to go ashore. I was a virtual prisoner in Ian's cabin from then until the ship sank in a violent storm a month later. Ian knew the ship was about to break up, and he made me dress in several layers of warm clothes. Then he literally dragged me to the upper boat deck, where he threw me in a life raft. General Hui joined us just before the ship floundered, and we floated free."
"General Hui left the ship with you?"
"Yes, but he froze to death a few hours later. The cold was unbearable. The waves tall as houses. It was a miracle we survived."
"You and Ian were picked up?"
"No, we drifted ashore. I was within an inch of death from hypothermia, but he broke into a vacation cabin, started a fire, and brought me back to life. Several days later, we made our way across the country to the house of a cousin of Ian's, who lived in New York. He took us in until we could stand on our own feet. We knew we couldn't go back to China after it had been taken over by the communists, so we decided to remain in the United States, where we were married. After obtaining the proper documents, I won't say how, Ian went back to sea while I raised our family. Most of those years, we lived on Long Island, New York, but we vacationed every summer around the Great Lakes when the children were young,
and grew to love the west coast of Lake Michigan. When Ian retired, we built this house. It's a good life, and we enjoy boating on the lake." "You were both very lucky people," said Julia.
Katie looked longingly at a photograph of her with their children and grandchildren taken during their last Christmas reunion. There were other photos. One of a young Ian standing on a dock in the Orient, next to a tramp steamer, was in a frame next to a beautiful blonde Katrina, holding a small dachshund under her arm. She wiped a tear that formed in one eye.
"You know," she said, "every time I look at that picture, I feel sad. Ian and I had to abandon the ship so quickly that I left my little dachshund Fritz behind in the cabin. The poor little thing went down with the ship."
Julia looked at the two little dogs that followed Katie everywhere, tails wagging.
"It looks as if Fritz is still with you, at least in spirit."
"Do you mind if I talk to Mr. Gallagher?" asked Pitt.
"Not at all. Just go through the kitchen to the back door. You'll find him down on the boat dock."
Pitt stepped from the kitchen door onto a long porch overlooking the lake. He walked across a lawn that sloped toward the shore and ended at a small pier that jutted out about 30 feet into the lake. He found Ian Hong Kong Gallagher sitting on a canvas stool at the end of the pier, a fishing pole propped on a small handrail. An old weathered slouch hat was pulled down over his eyes, and he appeared to be dozing. The gentle movement of the pier and the sound of footsteps awakened him to Pitt's approach.
"That you, Katie?" he asked in a rumbling voice.
"Afraid not," Pitt answered. Gallagher turned, peered at the stranger a moment from under the brim of his hat, and then refaced the lake.
"I thought you might be my wife."
The words came with a soft Irish accent. "Doing any good?" The old Irishman reached down and pulled up a chain from the water with 6 good-sized fish dangling from it.
"They're hungry today."
"What do you use for bait?"
"I've tried them all, but chicken livers and worms still work the best."
Then he asked,
"Do I know you?"
"No, sir. My name is Dirk Pitt. I'm with NUMA."
"I've heard of NUMA. You conducting research on the lake?"
"No, I've come to talk to Hong Kong Gallagher about the Princess Do Wan." There it was. No fireworks, no drum roll, just the plain simple fact. Gallagher sat immobile. Neither the twitch of a muscle nor the tick of an eye gave away what Pitt knew had to be a shocking surprise. Finally, Gallagher sat up stiffly on his canvas stool, pulled the hat to the back of his head, and fixed Pitt with a melancholy gaze.
"I always knew you'd come someday asking questions about the princess. Who'd you say you were with again, Mr. Pitt?"
"The National Underwater and Marine Agency."
"How did you track me down after all these years? It's almost impossible to hide from computers nowadays."
Pitt moved closer and observed that Gallagher was a big man, weighing close to 230 pounds, and every bit as tall as Pitt at 6 feet 3 inches. His face was surprisingly smooth for an old seaman, but then most all his time at sea had been spent in the engine room, where it was warm and the air heavy with the smell of oil. Only the red skin and bulbous nose gave away the effects of a love for alcohol. The stomach was round and hung over his belt, but the shoulders were still strong and broad. He had kept most of his hair and let it go white along with a mustache that hid his upper lip. The fishing pole gave a jerk, and Gallagher grabbed the grip and reeled in a nice 3-pound coho salmon.
"They stock the lake with trout and salmon, but I miss the old days when you could pull in a big pike or muskie."
"I talked to your wife," said Pitt.
She told me how the two of you survived the storm and the sinking. A bit of a wonder, that one. She said General Hui died on the raft. The scum got what he deserved, Gallagher said, smiling tightly. You must be aware of Hui's role in the last voyage of the Princess, or you wouldn't be here. I know General Hui and Chiang Kai-shek stole China's historic heritage and seized the Princess Do-wan with the intention of secretly smuggling the treasure to the United States, where it was to be hidden. That was their plan, until Mother Nature stepped in. It took a team of dedicated people to dig through the subterfuge, Pitt informed him. The fake distress signal about the ship sinking off Valparaiso, salting the water with the ship's life vests, altering the Princess Do-wan to pass for her sister ship, the Princess Yung Tai, during her passage through the Panama Canal and down the St. Lawrence into the Great Lakes. The only missing piece of the puzzle was your destination. Gallagher cocked an eyebrow. Chicago. We had arranged through the American State Department to unload the treasures at the terminal facilities at the port of Chicago. Where they were to be sent from there, I haven't the foggiest idea. But foul weather swept in from the north. As a man familiar with the oceans, I had no conception that the Great Lakes in North America could brew up worse storms than any at sea. By God, man, since then I've seen saltwater sailors get seasick and heave their guts out during an inland water storm. They say there are over 55,000 recorded shipwrecks in the Great Lakes alone, said Pitt. And Lake Michigan wins the prize for having swallowed more ships than all the other lakes combined. The waves on the lakes can be deadlier than those on any ocean, Gallagher maintained. They pile up 30 feet and come at you much faster. Ocean waves swell and roll from only one direction. Great Lakes waves are more treacherous and relentless. They seethe and gyrate like a maelstrom from every direction at once. No, sir, I've seen cyclones in the Indian Ocean, typhoons in the Pacific, and hurricanes in the Atlantic. But I'm telling you, there is nothing more terrible than a winter tempest on the Great Lakes. And the night the Princess went down was one of the worst. Unlike the sea, there was almost no room to maneuver a ship on the lakes, said Pitt. That's a fact. A ship can run before the storm at sea. Here she must continue on course or founder. Gallagher then told of the night the Princess Do-wan broke up and sank. He spoke of it as though it was a recurring dream. The 52 years since had not dimmed his memory of the tragedy. Every detail seemed as fresh as if it happened the day before. He told of the suffering he and Katie had endured, and how General Hui froze to death in the raft. After we came ashore, I pushed the raft with Hui still in it back into the raging waters of the lake. I never saw him again, and often wondered if his body was found. Can I ask you where the ship foundered? In which Great Lake? Gallagher hooked the fish through the gill on the chain and dropped it in the water beside the pier before answering. Then he raised his hand and pointed toward the east. Right out there. At first, Pitt didn't get it. He thought Gallagher was referring to any one of the four Great Lakes that lay to the east. Then it hit him. Lake Michigan? The Princess Do-wan sank here in Lake Michigan, not far from where we stand? I'd guess about 25 miles slightly south of east from here. Pitt was elated and numb at the same time. This revelation was too good to be true. The wreck of the Princess Do-wan and its priceless treasure were lying only 25 miles away. He turned and stared at Gallagher. You and Mrs. Gallagher must have been cast ashore nearby. Not close by, Gallagher said, smiling. This exact spot where the pier sits. We tried for years to buy this property for sentimental reasons, but the owners wouldn't sell. Only after they died did their kids let us have it.
We tore down the old cabin they used for family vacations on the lake. The same cabin that saved Katie and me from freezing to death. It was in poor shape. So we tore it down and built the house you see. We figured we was given a second chance in life, and it would be a good idea to spend our remaining years at the very spot we were reborn. Why didn't you look for the wreck and salvage the artifacts yourself? Gallagher gave a short laugh and slowly shook his head. What good would it do? The communists still run China. They would claim it as theirs. I'd be lucky to keep a nail out of one of them packing crates they rest in. You might have filed a claim for yourself and become a very rich man. The communists wouldn't be the only vultures to come gathering around. The minute I'd begin pulling up them antiques, the bureaucrats from the states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and the federal government would have come down all over me. I'd have ended up spending more time in court than salvaging the wreck and paying attorneys more than I'd make out of it. You're probably right, said Pitt. You bet I'm right, snorted Gallagher. I did a bit of treasure hunting myself when I was young. It never paid off. You make a strike, and besides having to fight the government, other treasure hunters appear like locusts to rape your wreck. No, Mr. Pitt, my family was my riches. I figured, leave well enough alone. The treasure ain't going anywhere. When the proper time comes, I always thought, somebody will salvage it for the good of the people. In the meantime, I've been perfectly content without it. There aren't many men who think like you do, Mr. Gallagher, said Pitt with respect. Son, when you're as old as I am, you see there are a lot more things in life than owning a fancy yacht and a jet plane. Pitt smiled at the old man on the canvas stool. Mr. Gallagher, I like your style. Ian cleaned his catch of fish, and Katie insisted Dirk and Julia stay for dinner. They also offered to put them up for the night, but Pitt was anxious to return to Manitowoc, find a place to use as a headquarters for the search and salvage project, and call Sandecker with the news. During dinner, the two women happily chatted away in Mandarin Chinese while the men swapped sea stories. Was Captain Hunt a good man? No better seaman ever trod a deck. Gallagher stared sadly through the window out onto the lake.
He's still out there. He went down with the ship. I saw him standing in the wheelhouse as calm as if he was waiting for a table at a restaurant. He turned back to Pitt. I hear the cold, fresh water preserve things, unlike salt water and sea creatures that eat bodies and ships until there's nothing left. Pitt nodded. Not long ago, divers brought up an automobile from a car ferry that had been on the bottom of this same lake for nearly 70 years. The upholstery was still sound, the tires still held air, and after drying out the engine and carburetor and changing the oil, they charged the original battery and started the car. It was then driven to an auto museum in Detroit. Then the Chinese treasures should be in good shape. Most of it, I should imagine, especially the bronze and porcelain artworks. Wouldn't that be a sight, Gallagher said wistfully, seeing all them antiques lying there on the bottom of the lake. Then he shook his head and rubbed eyes that were beginning to moisten. But it would tear my heart out to look at the poor old princess. Perhaps, said Pitt. But she found a more noble death than if she was torn apart by the scrappers in Singapore. You're right, Gallagher said solemnly. She did find a noble death.